all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
With real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin on this Tuesday, May 28th, 2024. Nice to have you along for the second hour of Up North News Radio across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, social media, as a podcast. However you got here, welcome for our shortened work week with Greg Bach extending the weekend just a bit. So Luke Mathers is here stepping in. Kristen Lyerly, our friend, our doctor, our congressional candidate, will talk about what's happening in Louisiana and the whole mifepristone legal battle coming up. But first, Brittany Merlot is here too, meteorologist. But first, where's Aurora? Where's the puppy?
She's napping. She's napping over in the corner. Bring her on the screen when she's not napping, but she's napping over in the corner.
Okay. Well, in that case, allow me to do a dramatic, only slightly dramatic recreation of when Luke first turned on the camera, and I could see that Luke was filling in there in the studios of WAUK in Waukesha. I said, "Good morning, Luke," and there's a puppy in the studio. There's a puppy. It's like
that's pretty accurate.
Aurora went to the corner and took a nap, and so the. That cute segment of the show is all done with now. So unless Aurora wakes up.
Sleeping dogs lie.
Yes, exactly. Brittany, it was a great weekend here in Chippewa Falls. We got a little light rain on and off, but not nearly what other folks got. Kristen, you said it was kind of almost a washout in Green Bay over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. We've got some flooding here.
Yep. So Brittany, how'd the weekend go for you? And, you know, what do we expect from here?
It was just a wet, gross kind of weekend.
Gross,
I mean,
yes.
That's just the best way to put it. I mean, I did a lot of indoor chores on Sunday, unfortunately, because a lot of the outdoor plans were canceled as about 2 to 3 inches of rain fell, especially into the Fox Valley, a lot of places getting slammed. And even Milton, a tornado touched down on Sunday night, right around 5:30 p.m., doing damage to some homes there as well. So I know that they still came together for a Memorial Day parade on Monday, even in between the cleanup of that debris. So it's crazy to see communities really coming together. That tornado was not expected. No severe weather was supposed to be happening on Sunday, just some heavy rainfall, but you never know this time of year. So always stay weather savvy. Today we do have chances for some more scattered showers here this afternoon and some more rumbles of thunder and some storms this evening. Again, none are supposed to be severe, but we could get some heavy downpours of around a quarter of an inch. And of course, it's going to stay mostly cloudy today and cooler, with highs still staying stuck in those mid to upper 60s. But we will see some sunshine midweek and we will get warmer. But I'll have all of those details. I'm going to hold off until tomorrow.
Okay. We'll take a little warm break. Still not, you know, not hot, but not winter. That's all I got to go with here. Is,
the in-between.
We're stuck in weather, in seasonal limbo is what it is. But we'll see if we can't earn our way out of that soon. Brittany, thanks so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
We're going to be talking in just a bit about electric vehicles and charging stations and what exactly is the business model going forward for places that are better known as gas stations as we move on to EVs. We'll tackle that question in a bit, but while Dr. Lyerly is here in OBGYN and we frequently talk about reproductive rights and the issues involved in them, and we know that the U.S. Supreme Court is weighing a case involving the so-called abortion pill, mifepristone, and many people noting, Kristen, that it is a medication that is safe, is tested, is effective, and yet Louisiana, because of course it's always going to come from the deep south first. Louisiana has a bill being pushed through the legislature to categorize these pills as, quote, controlled substances. That's the kind of thing you do with, with illicit drugs, and yet they're doing this for something that you would provide to patients in need.
This is a bill that was actually signed into law in Louisiana, and it's just what you said, Pat. This is a safe, effective medication that's been around for over 20 years. We have plenty of use data. So we know that it is effective not only in providing abortion care, but in helping to manage miscarriages for people who are suffering with heartbreaking situations. And here they are in Louisiana, putting it on a list of dangerous controlled substances, things like heroin, oxycodone, things that doctors actually have a registry that every time we prescribe a narcotic, we have to check in with the registry. And so these medications are tracked. And that is one of the biggest problems here is now we have essentially a pregnancy tracker. Anyone who seeks these kinds of medications and gets a prescription in Louisiana will be on a list. It's the chilling effect, really, that they're going after here. They're not worried about the safety of the medication. They say they are. They say they're trying to protect pregnant people. But the truth of the matter is they are trying to scare, intimidate, and create confusion. So not only will people not seek the kind of care that they need, but people won't be willing to help them. This is a crisis.
Now, there is already this case about mifepristone before the U.S. Supreme Court that they want the justices to say basically to the FDA, you're wrong. You may have tested it and found it safe, but we hereby deem it, you know, unsafe. So there isn't really a legal need for this Louisiana law to become the test case for mifepristone, but I wonder if this is just another legal attack, or is the legal attack that, hey, since the FDA has ruled this safe, that this state law is null and void? Is that the more likely path for this law?
I think that remains to be seen. I mean, ultimately, we know that this is clearly not a medical step. This is not something that they did out of good medical practice. They did this out of pure politics to, as I said earlier, to fear or to create fear and to intimidate people. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen with Louisiana, how it plays out with what's going on with the Supreme Court right now, and the bigger battle over abortion care ultimately. But, you know, it all ties into contraception care and women's health in general, all of those other things that really are on the line. If you've been paying attention, you know that contraception is something that is in the balance, just like abortion was a few years ago. Now, it's entirely possible that come November, we could lose access to our ability to get contraception. And then what?
Then we enter a whole new realm for this election cycle, not just for this country, not just for women, but for a cycle with a Supreme Court, a U.S. Supreme Court that has already shown they're willing to fly their flag quite literally about where their political beliefs are and, you know, just throw everything for a loop if mm-hmm. that's the way that this comes out. So I have a feeling you're going to be a very busy person over the next, some folks are saying it could be, they're not going to necessarily wait till the end of June. It could be like any day we start seeing rulings on cases like this one. And it's not going to be pretty, I don't think.
Well, and keep in mind that the Supreme Court mifepristone case, also, it's not just about the abortion pills, but it's about undermining the FDA. The FDA went through a rigorous medical process, a rigorous scientific process to approve this medication. If the Supreme Court, a non-medical body, then declares that this medication isn't safe, what's next? Mm-hmm. Oh, the FDA is invalidated.
Right. If you, again, if the expert, what experts, you and you expert, we, you know, this, you know, theocracy wannabe will decide what you can and cannot have. Mm-hmm. To her great credit, CNN anchor Breonna Keeler pushed back on a Louisiana state senator who was a primary sponsor of the bill, saying in so many words, don't y'all have better things to do?
Look, respectfully, abortion, again, is illegal already in Louisiana. We're trying to make sure that folks are not.
Yeah, but so then why make it a Schedule 4 then?
What? Because we want to make sure that physicians and nurse practitioners and nurse and physician's assistants have the opportunity to prescribe the medication. We need to make sure that, you know, these medications are used and there's no doubt. But even in states where abortion is not illegal, you have a 10-week period where it's not supposed to be written without seeing a doctor at all after 10 weeks of gestation. You know, and we've got to make sure that, that women are being cared for or being and checked for ectopic pregnancies. Well, when they are being used as well. And I think that's important that we, again, make sure that we're maintaining the doctor-patient relationship rather than having a friend or someone bring medication into a state. That is concerning in and of itself. And, honestly, it was illegal prior to this legislation passing and hopefully being signed into law shortly. Prescription medication requires a prescription by a doctor, a nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant.
Yeah, all things, all laws that were already in place, right? And the Schedule 4 is not something you initially had in there. But let me ask you this. You talk about the importance of caring for women. Your state is 46th out of 50 for maternal expectancy. So when you're talking about there being better care for women, I mean, why aren't you tackling that instead?
We are continuing to do as much as we can on pushing maternal health care into the forefront and make sure that we're doing everything possible to within our budgetary means to ensure
That's a good place to stop right there. We're doing everything we can within our budgetary means.
I mean, there's only so much money and we have to spend it on the things that we care about. And, you know, women and children and families, they don't rate as high as, you know, the other things.
The other things like, you know, again, making decisions that, you know, doctors and scientists had been making previously that we want to overrule.
We care about women.
Right. I mean, he says it all so smoothly. You know, he's rehearsed these points over and over again. But the numbers don't lie. 46th out of 50 for maternal expectancy. That's a fancy way of saying moms die. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, moms die, especially in the South. And, you know, new data came out of Alabama. So just down the road, 21%, their residency applications are down 21%. That means that 1/5 of the people who might have gone to Alabama to study and to want to provide care in the future have decided I'm staying out of this state. We're seeing this all over the country. And in fact, we're seeing it in Wisconsin as well because of our severe restrictions. We know that women who live in states with abortion bans are 3 times more likely to die, 3 times more likely to die related to their pregnancy because they're not getting the care, the health care that they need. Abortion is health care. And I know it's hard to talk about, but we have to talk about it. In this political scenario that we are living in right now, we have to have these conversations because literally people are dying, families are being torn apart, and we have to do better.
Coming up next, we'll talk about the future of EVs and charging stations and gas stations. Right after this on Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls, I'm Pat Kreitlow.
Oh boy.
This was going to be like this uplifting, happy moment of Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn releasing this song on this day in 1973.
Whole Louisiana other
woman, Mississippi Man. Yeah, it seems so totally different now where Mississippi Man says, Louisiana woman, you can't do what you want. You know, I own you.
Can you park on the river and make sure that when they're crossing over that they have, you know, contraception and information so that they are safe when they are practicing their love?
Oh, all right.
These are some of the ideas that I have.
You have ideas. And you even have ideas about electric vehicles, which we're gonna share next year. The headline from late last week says Quick Trip is going to become a big player in EV charging thanks to a grant program. The Wisconsin DOT awarded $23 million in federal funds to support the state's first steps in building a statewide charging network. The La Crosse-based Quick Trip convenience store chain was awarded nearly half of the 53 grants designed to cover 80% of the cost of installing the charging stations. Private businesses pick up the balance. There are 23 other businesses that also got grants through the funding, all part of the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, a Biden administration initiative that aims to build 500,000 electric vehicle chargers along the nation's highways and throughout their communities. All that from Carl Ebert writing in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But before I launch it to the two of you, what really caught my eye was a tweet from Tyler Hendricks, somebody I really like to read his posts. And he put up in so many words, you know, that this is all fine, but what does Quick Trip then do for people who are used to stopping there? You gas up, that takes 5 minutes, you grab what you want, and you go on your way. What does Quick Trip become when you've now got to wait 15 to 30 minutes for a charge? And can they compete if McDonald's next door gets charging stations? How does this whole infrastructure look in the future? And Kristen, as an EV owner, you have thoughts.
I do have thoughts. I have an EV. Mm-hmm. And we had the challenging situation of going to pick it up and not having charging stations to stop and charge on the way home. So we didn't make it home from Milwaukee. We had to leave the car in Manitowoc on the way home. No. I know. But I mean, this is all part of owning an EV and the range anxiety that a lot of people have, and deservedly so, as I experienced on my first trip. So I'm really excited to hear that Quick Trip is thinking about this. And frankly, I think this is a giant opportunity for Quick Trip. Look at what they've done with their convenience store brand and how they really have turned the store not into just a place where you stop and get gas, but they have good food, not just good food, but good healthy food. Maybe this is where Quick Trip branches out and becomes like more like a McDonald's, more like a place where you can stop and hang out for that 15 to 30 minutes while you charge up.
Well, that's exactly it. And here's the exact tweet, and then I want Luke's two cents on this. Tyler writes, "The question I've always had about Quick Trip is what they do when EVs take precedence on the road over gas engines. Do they basically become a restaurant you wait at while you charge, or does McDonald's put in chargers and get into vehicle fueling?" I thought that was a good point, Luke, that this is, you build a model on gassing up, which is a relatively short thing. And yeah, the Quick Trip's done a lot to grow and burnish their image, but is it the same when you basically have to turn yourself into a restaurant? You're going to have to put some seats in there now.
I don't know about that. Do you know how long some Quick Trip trips can take with Wisconsin Goodbye? Like, you could get a real good charge on your EV with, you know, you get familiar with the cashier instead of see you next time.
We'll see you in 15 minutes.
Then you forgot something, so you pop back in, and boom, you're already half battery and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what their new tagline is going to be. It's going to be, "Hey, charged up to see you next time."
There you go.
No, nothing? Okay. Never mind.
You better get paid for workshopping some of those taglines.
Clearly I don't. And that's where, again, having been recent purchasers of a hybrid, where I mean, it's just so nice. You really feel like you're getting the best of both worlds at this point. But this network is only going to grow and grow. This, you know, this is not Betamax. You know, this is not Laserdisc. This isn't something to go, "Hey, remember EVs?" I mean, look, obviously anybody can eat their words about something, but I don't think we're going to be saying that. I think we've got this. So you may as well build the network and stop at your Quick Trip EV. Whereas Alicia writes in, "Yep, your Quick Trip cashier knows you by name," and it's true.
Yeah. It's a whole different way of thinking about cars, though. We think about cars in one way. Our parents thought about cars in a different way. Our kids are going to think about cars in a whole new way. So it's just a different frame of mind and a real opportunity for a progressive organization. I never thought I would say this, a progressive organization like Quick Trip, which is, I mean, let's be honest, we're all Wisconsin proud to see what they've done. And some of the Quick Trips already have EV chargers there.
Yes.
So how exciting for Quick Trip to be on the forefront of what is certainly to be the future of travel.
And by the way, for folks, I know there are people who are talking back to their radio right now that the Zillow family that you know, that runs Quick Trip, they give primarily to Republicans and conservatives and all that. Well, yeah, they do now because Republicans have been in charge for 14 years. They were donors of mine when I was in the legislature. They, you know, some businesses are very philosophical, others are very incumbent minded. And, you know, look to work with incumbents or, you know, particular challengers. So I'm not going to ascribe a particular political philosophy just yet, because, again, you've got this Wisconsin brand, you know, much like just like the Culver family over at Culver's. Well, put them in the same category by and large. And so I'd like to see this all work and not just say, well, it's just McDonald's everywhere now and you charge up your vehicle there. You know, it would work better if we had more Wisconsin run businesses. Quick check on sports at 7:27. Willie Adames hit a 3-run homer in a 5-run eighth inning. The Brewers beat the Cubs 5-1 on Monday, and Craig Counsell's return to American Family Field. I was away from the house and the TV at the time, you guys, so I did not. I wanted to feel the moment when he came out and was introduced. And I mean, just the chorus of boot, but I didn't see it. Luke, I don't know if you watched the game and saw it. And I'm delighting too much in it, but
I saw it on social media. I was listening to the game, so I wasn't watching.
Okay. I don't know. Kristen, tell me I'm a terrible human being for enjoying any Craig Counsell getting booed.
You're a terrible human being.
Thank you.
Try to be nicer.
Okay. I'm gonna try to work on that. I'm gonna try to work on that with everybody but Craig Counsell. How's that?
There you go. Baby steps.
I think we're doing okay. Ultimately, I think we're doing pretty good.
We are doing pretty good. Come on. We're in first place, 4.5 games ahead of the Cubs.
Yep. All right? So what's the problem?
So we are exceeding expectations, and Craig Counsell is not living up to his expectations.
And maybe during the second half of the season, we'll be rocking it. I mean, that'll be something new.
I would like that very much, you know, and again, have Craig Counsell watching, you know, October baseball from his living room.
Let it go, Pat. You got to let it go. Very,
not a chance, Kristen. Not a chance. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you a little later.
Thanks.
We'll be hearing from Mark Pocan and Katrina Shanklin as part of a segment with Hans Breitenmoser and Mike Stotts from National Farmers Union next. You're up north.
Electric Avenue.
And then we'll take it higher. Hey, we're gonna rock down to
Electric Avenue.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It's dog day. I didn't realize that, you know, Aurora's in the studio with Luke, and Hans has got a friend over there. Morning, Hans Breitenmoser. Who's your friend?
This is Fern.
This is who? I'm sorry?
Fern.
Fern. Okay. Hi, Fern. What kind of dog is Fern?
She's a Great Dane.
Great Dane. Okay. I can just see the nose and the face in there. Very friendly. All right. How's your field work going up there?
What field work, Matt?
A little wet?
Well, it's wet. It's very wet. We did get another 38 acres of corn planted on Saturday afternoon, evening, and just before it started raining again. And, of course, Sunday it rained, and yesterday it rained. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Rain came down. Yep. Well, thanks for you know, taking a break from the waiting while we talk about the farm bill, which we know continues to be about 7 months late at this point. Still got to get done this year. And you brought along again our friend Mike Stranz, Vice President for Advocacy from the National Farmers Union. Mike, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Glad to be here. Hope you had a good long weekend and that things are nice on the lake.
Things were beautiful on the lake. I mean, not for me. You know, outboard engine conked out, but you know, we'll see if we can't get that fixed up. And
that's what oars are for.
That's what oars. Yes, on that pontoon, it'll work so well.
Come on, Mathers, Pat. Yeah, I want to see you try to get the pontoon going with an oar. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, let's get a reset on the Farm Bill, which is a massive program. It is designed to attract bipartisan support because it has to be both rural and urban. There's farm programs, there's nutrition programs, there's conservation programs. These things determine the markets, exports, everything. It's designed to reach consensus. And yet this time around, between House Republicans calling for cuts and Senate Democrats looking for investments, things aren't looking great from Chippewa Falls. But how are they looking from the National Farmers Union standpoint at this particular point in time?
So last Thursday night and early Friday morning, the House Agriculture Committee had a markup of their draft version of the Farm Bill. That hearing, that markup went for about 13 and a half hours, and at about 1 a.m., they voted on a 31 to 22 vote to approve or to pass their bill out of committee. And it would include cuts to nutrition. It would repurpose some climate dollars away from climate programs and use them more generally in conservation and elsewhere, and make some other big changes, including some adjustments to the farm safety net. So the House committee has moved. Now it's time for the Senate Agriculture Committee and the full Senate to take action. So they've got some work to do.
Very much so, especially when you hear, you know, the things that Senate Democrats would like to do. Before we hear comments from Congressman Pocan and congressional candidate Katrina Shanklin, Hans, wanted to get your thoughts on what you've been reading up on in terms of the House Ag Committee markup and the differences in viewpoints, shall we say.
Well, I don't know. We've had this conversation before. We know that the Farm Bill is a big, important thing that a lot of people don't understand how much it impacts, the lives of people in our rural areas. And you've got, one chance to get it right because it lasts for a few years. So moving the needle on conservation and on climate and on the nutritional side, it's very important. And to eliminate some of these programs and to reduce them is a little ridiculous. And this all goes back to on the farm side of things, on the production side of things, we talk about antitrust legislation and what it's doing to the rural economy. Some of these safety nets are needed very, very much so because of the fact that we don't have the political will to move the needle on antitrust legislation and change some of the ways that we, pay for some of the ag products that we all consume.
Yeah. And so it's what led to a press conference on Friday from Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan, a Democrat who has endorsed Democratic candidate and State Representative Katrina Shanklin. Representative Shanklin is one of three Democrats looking to run against Derek Van Orden, along with Rebecca Cook and Eric Wilson. They will all square off in the August primary. But Mark Pocan brought Katrina Shanklin along on Friday's presser, in part to take on something that Derek Van Orden's been posting, saying that the Democrats on the House Ag Committee are flat out lying about the Farm Bill. We are not cutting SNAP benefits. And so in the press conference, I asked Congressman Mark Pocan to explain to Congressman Van Orden what exactly constitutes a cut in SNAP benefits. And here's what Congressman Pocan told me.
This is, the classic Madison, Washington, Kabuki dance when it comes to talking about this. But real people get it way more than politicians. So Derek is again saying there is no cut to the SNAP program. But for the next 5 years, there will be no increase to the SNAP benefit. Now, unless Derek is going to figure out how to magically make sure there is no inflation in the next 5 years, if you get $6 a day, and in a year you still have $6 a day, and in 5 years you have $6 a day, milk is going to go up and other commodities are going to go up, and you will be able to buy less and less because of a specific provision the Republicans have that doesn't allow for any increase in benefit. In addition to it, there is a cut to the summer EBT program that does help kids who won't be in school, who normally would have got free or reduced lunch. So that is the specific language why, it only a politician would say it's not a cut if in a year or 5 years you can buy less with that amount of money, because I'm sure Derek will somewhere claim that there is inflation going on. And I will agree with him. There is inflation going on. But if there is and you don't address it, you clearly know what you're up to.
So Mike Stranz from the National Farmers Union, not looking to put you guys in any kind of a partisan box necessarily, but where I'm getting at is the notion that You can't just be talking about real dollars and ignore inflation when you're talking about the farm bill and the things that are in it. And I would like to think that you and others just want members of Congress on both sides to be more forthright, a little more honest about what's happening with those dollars year after year after year.
Well, the farm bill is a chance to make updates to programs. But when the main savings or the political push seems to be behind making cuts to nutrition programs, we're starting on the wrong foot right away there. So to cast this as the farm bill needs to cut nutrition in order to pay for other programs, just that's a non-starter politically. It got through the committee, sure, but that sort of approach isn't going to work on the House floor when a bunch of Republicans are going to vote against the farm bill no matter what, and it's not going to attract many Democrats, if any, on the House floor when it comes to a vote like that. So making that assertion that it's not a cut when there's clearly a reduction in benefits going on down the road, that's not a good way to start building a bipartisan bill.
No, and it is something that we've seen consistently. The other cut I want to play from Friday's press conference is from State Representative Katrina Shanklin, a candidate for Congress, when I asked about the SNAP program, because people, I think, quite unfairly go, oh, you mean food stamps for all those, you know, urban families, and that, you know, that it doesn't do anything for us. And the numbers clearly show otherwise. And this is what Representative Shanklin had to say. And then Hans will come to you.
In terms of rural communities benefiting from SNAP, we know that for every dollar we fund in SNAP, it generates almost $2 in local economic activity. And a lot of that really creates local jobs in rural communities where the economy is strengthened, I would say, duly by that extra $1 or $2 in benefit from that $1 investment. These are places where they may not have large manufacturing companies or processing plants, but when we have that spending at the local mom and pop Main Street grocery store, we know that that doesn't just help the family who's being fed, but also the supply chain within the community, from the business to the money that they're spending in other businesses on Main Street. And so I would say, you know, SNAP is incredibly beneficial, not only to urban and suburban communities, but rural. That's why there's such a strong coalition of there had been a strong coalition of both Democrats and Republicans strongly supporting it. It covers the majority of the farm bill. There is a reason it was intentionally the farm bill has always included SNAP first, and it's because that's how you get the votes to support agriculture and food security in communities across Wisconsin and the country.
Right. And so, Hans, again, it is just being mindful of this needs to be an example of how the best of us that we're supposed to see in elected office work together. And I don't think we're seeing that right about now.
No, I don't think we're seeing it either. And it's so important to, this is where we really need to be seeing it, because this is such a big deal and such an important thing for rural communities. And I think, you know, as was stated earlier, we need to look at these dollars as investments, because they not only help the people who are getting them, but they help the communities that they go into at the ground level. It's the best way for public-private partnerships to work is when that money gets close to the ground, because it will get invested in those local areas.
It's noted in the Hill that big lobbying groups have spent $400 million so far lobbying Wisconsin or lobbying Congress on a new farm bill. Rebecca Cook noted it in a post that said, we need a farm bill that delivers for family farms in communities across Wisconsin, not one built around subsidizing agricultural conglomerates and prioritizing corporate profits. Now, as Congressman Pocan told me on Friday, again, this particular farm bill fight, Mike, is not focusing on monopoly power and things like that. It's about all these other programs and getting them funded. So, Mike, from a National Farmers Union standpoint, you know, what's the best case scenario going forward?
Well, like Hans said before, we need to get at the monopoly issues that make so many of the other factors in agriculture so much worse by building volatility when you've got just a few companies controlling big chunks of the marketplace. The House bill that made it through committee this week didn't touch that, didn't do anything to try to address those monopoly competition issues. The Senate side, however, does have some language in their farm bill that would put greater emphasis on enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act, put more enforcement of ensuring there's competition in the seed sector. Things like that are included in the Senate bill or the draft that we're hearing about and are not part of the House bill that passed last week.
You know, one of the things that we discussed on Friday is the way the Biden administration has really tried to act as on behalf of consumers more than pretty much any recent administration in memory, in terms of going after things like excess credit card fees, junk fees, ticket fees, all kinds of other things that have that kind of monopoly power attached to them that drives up cost for consumers. It's not big and flashy, but it's effective in showing that you're fighting for the consumer. Is that something that either the Biden administration is currently messaging or something that they could be doing to look pro-consumer in this farm bill fight? Or are they simply letting, you know, this play out between the House and Senate at the moment?
I think there's a big emphasis across the administration. I don't think there is a big emphasis across the Biden administration to go after the monopolies. And there's a lot of supporters out there and enthusiasts for this out there as well. Farmers Union was just part of the anti-monopoly summit here in Washington last week, where we heard from the chair of the FTC, the chief antitrust enforcer of the Department of Justice, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau head. There's a lot of initiative within the administration. They've made some strides towards this. We've seen it in agriculture, and you see the headlines in other sectors of the economy too. So it's not as much part of the farm bill as it should be. And we've been calling for a competition title in the farm bill, and we hope to see elements of that rise up in the Senate version.
Because if it doesn't, again, this is an every 5-year thing, and we have no idea what Congress or the White House is going to look by then. So the House Ag Committee had their markup. We know Senate Democrats told us what they want to be in their version. Has the Senate Ag Committee done a markup yet?
Not yet.
Would that be the next step then?
That'd be the next step. We're hoping to see that later in June or into July.
No, I really thought this might be ready earlier instead of getting dragged, you know, closer and closer to the conventions and the presidential election. But at this point, we're just going to have to stay on top of it and see if we can't get two sides to work together on this. Mike Stranz, Vice President for Advocacy for the National Farmers Union. Mike, always great to chat with you. Thank you so much for taking time with us.
Thanks, Pat.
Hans Breitenmoser up in Lincoln County. Hope you get back into the field real soon. Wish you all the best. Thanks for being here this morning, Hans.
You bet. Thanks a lot. You guys appreciate
all
it.
All right. Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio is going to join us, tell us what's next on his show on the Civic Media Radio app and in the Wausau area. Coming up next, you're up north. I shouldn't do this, starting things off with Chad Holmes, whose show is coming up next on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, and you can hear it across the Civic Media app. But it would seem that if somebody puts up something on social media and then deletes it, they don't want to talk about it. And unless I'm seeing things wrong, I think this has been deleted. But weren't you telling me you were looking forward to being in a poker tournament? And didn't I see a post along the lines of, why do I enjoy this game? Why do I play this game?
I never deleted it.
Okay.
I stand by my word.
Okay. I just see so many sports things that I must be missing it.
Well, the whole thing was maybe I should have. Usually when I play, I put more than one posting on it. But
yes, you do.
I was so embarrassed by my performance on
Saturday.
There was only one. And it was like, you know, it's one thing that is always there's it's called the walk of shame. Everybody in a tournament has to walk.
Please pack up your knives and go. Yes.
The point of the tournament where all of your chips are gone, you have to get up, and then all you do is you feel like everybody's looking at you and knows that you're a big loser.
No. Just again, there can only be one first, and like we learned in Talladega Nights, Luke, if you're not first,
You're last.
Exactly.
It was fun to do, but man, it was a little bit shorter than I wanted it to be.
But everybody, and I like that you mentioned, that there's always got to be a catchphrase, because of course nobody Donald Trump, of all the other things that he's lucked out in life, got to be the one to go, "You're fired." You know, so you can't do that. So we're saying Top Chef is please pack up your knives and go. And there's all, you know, your torch has been extinguished, whatever the case.
Sashay away. Yeah, there's some good ones.
Yeah. So that's what they need, is they need a phrase like that for these poker tournaments. Yeah. Mr. Holmes, you heard us talking earlier about Quick Trip and adding electric vehicle charging stations. And what are you thinking of that?
Wonderful. But I was really happy at the end of your segment that you said, I know there are some people out there that are yelling at their radio right now that because you were talking to me. I was getting a little annoyed with that love fest for Quick Trip. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lyerly giving a food recommendation. Mm-hmm. Everybody's saying, "Oh, wonderful!" And you hit it on the head. I real fast. I don't mean to, you know, get into the weeds on this.
No.
I'm not willing to give the same benefit of the doubt to Quick Trip and Culver's that, well, they're just giving the money because Republicans were in charge.
Incumbents.
They're playing both sides of the street. That there's an implication there that they don't really believe that the money they're giving is leading to the laws that you were talking about in Louisiana and Alabama, because mm-hmm. it's not just strictly they're giving money to folks here in Wisconsin that have been pushing forward legislation that has, I would say, taken away reproductive freedoms from women, but that money, I'm sure, was going to the Republican National Committee and going to people like the folks, the gentleman that you had the soundbite on from Louisiana. So I'm not quite ready to say, okay, they're just playing both sides of the street. They don't really believe in what they're doing in terms of what that money is ultimately leading to. Because you look at this 2 years ago, where, you know, a lot of money went into the Ron Johnson campaign that ultimately gave him a 1-point victory over Mandela Barnes. I think it's important that, yes, hey, it's wonderful that they're willing to take the money that was made possible by wonderful legislation from the current president of the United States. But if it's true that they really want to play both sides of the street, I would like to see them perhaps reward the president for doing something that's going to help their bottom line business over the next decades.
Yeah, that I understand. And I'm just thinking more of, if you look back in the early 2000s, you'll find a whole lot of contributions to then Governor Jim Doyle, along with folks who were in, you know, when Democrats were in the majority, because those are the people that their lobbyists talk to, the ones that they feel like, you know, if they're not playing the extremes on behalf of the policies that benefit them, you know, yeah, that money gets used by candidates, and you can't say, you can't let your support for a candidate be judged by the most extreme thing that candidate does if they're also supporting the more moderate thing that you're doing. And other people rightfully would say, nope, you, no matter how moderate you may be, if you're supporting a candidate, you are, you know, giving tacit approval to their most extreme thing. So I get the point. I absolutely see the difference.
And also, again, I'm not so naive to realize the whole cynicalness, if that's a word.
Cynicism of it, sure.
Yeah, of the whole process where you're, you know, looking out for number one, and you're giving this money so you have somebody's ear to whisper in.
Yes.
I mean, you talk about, again, you know, that is not something that they had on Saturday mornings when they were talking about how a bill was passed. I mean,
there was no lobbyist in Schoolhouse Rock. That one got edited out.
I did not recall any of the envelopes being passed from mm-hmm. from folks coming up the steps at the Capitol to the bill itself. I mean, obviously there's a cynicism that is.
You know, let me tell this story again. Again, as a brand new legislator, and then somebody who'd reported on politics and knew about money, and yeah, I had to raise all kinds of money. I'm very not naive to that at all.
Right.
But there's just this feeling you get as a new legislator when they say, well, you know, so-and-so from the Wisconsin Blank Association is coming in to meet with you. Okay, fine. And you have this conversation, and they talk about, you know, the bills that, you know, they'd like to tell you about for this year, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's all fine. But then like a week later, you're looking at your finance reports and seeing that group just sent in, like, you know, a good-sized donation. And you just feel weird. You're just like, no, you didn't. I met with you because that's what a good legislator should do, you know, but that's how they feel like the system is supposed to work. And that's, it's unfortunate. Like I said earlier, this whole thing needs to be reformed.
And, you know, and I completely understand your feeling, because I always go back many years, because Russ Feingold was so, you know, on the forefront of trying to clean up the money. But you remember when he was actually trying to walk the walk, I think it was in the race against Mark Newman. I mean, it goes back so far, mm-hmm. where he said, I'm not going to use all that dirty money. It darn near cost him the election. I mean, right. That's, you know, it's sad, but true, that if you're trying to set a higher standard, sometimes it comes back and bites you really hard.
Said the poker player, who it's like, you know, I don't believe in four of a kind, so I'm not going to lay down all four of these cards.
It's just not fair. It's not fair. It's like, you know,
right.
Yeah.
You play the rules as they are. And then if it's your game later, then yeah, you get to make changes. Chad Holmes, you can hear him weekdays 8 to 10 on Bull Falls Radio and through the Civic Media app. Chad, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You bet. Thank you too, Pat.
Mr. Mathers, thank you so much for your capable job here. And assuming Greg actually wants to leave Washington, D.C., we'll see him tomorrow. But thank you for bringing Aurora by.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Pat.
All right. And thanks to all of you for joining us as well. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.